Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Season 5, Show 48. Tonight we have a special treat talking to Michael Gabriel. Michael Gabriel is the godson of Prince and Sheila E. His parents met while both on tour with those two artists, and he's going to talk about that and more, including his new single, Let There Be Light, and his new album, Genesis. Please help me welcome Michael Gabriel, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Michael Gabriel to the stage, everybody. Super excited to have him on here. Prolific multi-instrumentalist. So welcome to 88.5, the SoCal Sound, at-home interviews, as well as Deeper Groove podcast. Welcome. So happy to have you, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Cliff. It's great to be here.
Of course. So super excited. Chatted with your team for a while. Listened to your new record. Loving the singles and stuff that have dropped. But tell us a little bit about the latest record, Genesis. What inspired you to create and produce that record?
So I've had a collection of hundreds of songs for a long time and never really knew what to do with it. I always had wanted to release an album, but it was important to me to have a concept. And it's important to me to have a story to go along with the songs, and not just have a collection of songs, 12 songs on a record. And so at the beginning of this year, I had this sort of revelation. I was kind of going on a spiritual and musical revelation. And on this journey, I said, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to take the first step in releasing all of my material. And what better way to take that first step than with a record called Genesis, which means the origin, the beginning. And so once I had that concept, it was just kind of a snowball effect. The album is kind of it's part biblical allegory, and we can get into that in the track listing, but it's also a personal journey. So those two kind of ideas married together is what birthed the Genesis album.
Yeah, and I like what you were saying about the biblical allegory. When I did my record, The Gospel According to Cliff Beach, it kind of had Bible thematic themes right in there. So yeah, kind of walk through, I guess, the track listing and how you equate that to your the Genesis origins.
Right. So much of the record for me had to do with sentiment and what I wanted to feel when I was listening to a track, just myself. And when I'm out on tour, some of the best bands that I enjoy listening to are ones that straight out the gate, just, you know, they come out with all guns blazing. And that's kind of the feeling that I want. And so those first couple tracks, that's kind of the idea and the sentiment behind that. On an allegorical perspective, you're kind of going from the birth of the universe, the voice of God, the voice of the heavens and the divine, and then you're into the humanity aspect a couple of tracks down. And so that's kind of the short form version of the first like quarter of the record and how it kind of plays out in an allegorical sense.
Yeah, and let's take one of the tracks. One of the tracks that I'm going to be playing pretty recently is Let There Be Light. So kind of how did that come together?
Well, Let There Be Light, going back to the biblical theme, those are the first words that God spoke. And, you know, when you're thinking about the birth of the universe, it just kind of, the two kind of go hand in hand. And so it was just when I had that kind of revelation, I was in the studio at like 1 o'clock in the morning and recorded the whole track in about 30 minutes. You know, because, you know, when you're in the zone, you know, things just kind of have a way of working themselves out.
So when you say you did everything in 30 minutes, now you're a multi-instrumentalist, obviously influenced by Prince and people like Stevie Wonder, people that can just have all that genius in one package. And so how did you do that so quickly? Do you feel it's part of that divine intervention and the universe speaking to you, or how do you feel it came in?
Yeah, I think it's all of it. I mean, I'm a multi-instrumentalist kind of born out of necessity. You know, it's like I have an idea and I just need to get it out. You know, it's and so that was kind of the case with this song. You know, I think I had my guitar at the time and I would just play the riff that you hear in the song. And I was like, okay, I can't really go any further until I have like, you know, some really heavy drums, you know, here. So I went to the drum set and then laid that down, you know, and then, you know, finished the guitar part, then added the bass. And, you know, it's just a snowball effect. It's like, there's not necessarily any rhyme or reason. It's just what I needed to feel in that moment. And that's kind of what I mean by, I write a lot of based on sentiment, what I need to feel and what I need to relay, that the feeling I need to relay to whoever's listening to it.
Yeah. I know that when Quincy Jones was in the studio with Michael Jackson, he said whenever he saw Michael dancing to the tracks, then they knew that they had a hit.
Yeah.
So how did
knew it was the one.
Yeah. And yeah. I feel like that track, Let There Be Light, just has so much groove, such as that Lenny Kravitz meets Prince meets Michael vibe that I can definitely see people moving and grooving to it.
Thank you. Yeah. It was fun.
So now you've been kind of moving around. I know we were, you know, playing a little bit of tag to catch up with you, but you've been touring from what I've heard, and congrats. I believe that you've been the guitar player for Sheila E., who's also your godmom for a number of years. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. The tour has been going great. I've been working with Sheila since I was 16 years old. You know, it started off as a fly in the wall in the studio and then just kind of built up from there. And, you know, in working with her is just, allowed so many other opportunities, from, you know, film to television to tours to a bunch of different things. But yeah, it's the tour that we just recently finished was in Europe, and it was one of the best tours that I've ever been a part of. It was just great energy over there. We love it was mostly in the Netherlands. We had a date in Belgium, and then the rest were in Holland. But they were all fantastic. All of the performances were memorable. So it was great. Yeah.
I heard that you have to tour Europe because they just treat you so well. Is that true?
It is. I mean, they're really into music in a different, slightly different sense here in the States. Like they're really into, take a record, for example, they're into like the live versions of every song ever produced by a particular artist. Like they'll go really, really deep, you know. And you know, we have some of that, of course, here in the States. But they're definitely, you know, in terms of, you know, Prince and Sheila E., they're definitely Prince centric, Sheila E. centric fans out there. They're very passionate.
Nice. What's like a typical set list? Like, what are some of the jams? I mean, obviously with Sheila, you have the hits, you know. I love Oliver's House. I hope that makes it into
You know what? We just recently added that back in.
And nice.
We have been telling her for years. We're like, yo, that is the jam, you know, and so many of them, you know, but she's an artist that's always looking forward, you know, always looking ahead. You know, but it's so great to, you know, be able to go back as well. So it's a mixture, you know, I would say. I think it's a pretty healthy mixture of the hits, some deep cuts, and then some new stuff.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, you can't talk about Sheila E. without talking about Prince. And apparently you have a huge kind of history with Prince. Prince was your godfather, rest in peace, rest in purple. But your parents actually worked with Prince and Sheila E. Your dad was like head of security and then managed Prince for a while. And then your mom was a co-lyricist as well as like road manager for Sheila E. Yeah. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah. The family ties. They run kind of deep.
So then, you know, having these amazing godparents, like what was it kind of just being like growing up in that world, which not everybody is fortunate to have. So being around such prolific musicians so young.
Right. I don't think I noticed any difference. It was just normal, you know. I get that question a lot, and it's weird to answer because I don't know anything. I didn't know anything different. Being older and able to look back on that now, I realized, you know, what a blessing that was. But at the time, it was just like any other day, you know, as a kid, you know, you're just like, okay, you know, whatever. My kids, for example, I bring them to my show and they're like, oh, Dad, when is this going to be done? You know, and I'm like, you know, it was funny. We played the Grammys, and it was a Prince's tribute, right? Mm-hmm. Grammys tribute to Prince. And my daughter looks at me and she's like, Dad, is this live? I'm like, no, I recorded that months ago. You know, it's like, this was recorded when we did the Grammys, but they're airing it now. You know, there's just like kind of a disconnect as a kid. You know, it's like you don't realize that what's happening is unique and not normal. Mm-hmm. But I am so grateful for the blessing of being around such incredible musical talent at such a young age. I think it definitely it helped shape and mold me into the person that I am today and foster that musical creativity for sure.
So speaking of that musical creativity, besides obviously Prince and Lenny Kravitz, some people we mentioned, like who do you think are your musical influences?
Man, I find inspiration inspiration everywhere. Musical inspirations, of course, you know, you have Prince and you have Sheila, you have Stevie Wonder, you have Led Zeppelin, you have the Beatles, you have, you know, I find inspiration everywhere, and not just in music, you know, personal experience, stories, movies, you know, books, poetry, you know, I think it's important, you know, to be open and to be able to receive inspiration from a multitude of sources.
It's so interesting to me. You know, you talk about Led Zeppelin, you talk about rock and roll. I think that genre has become kind of ethno-specific, but then people forget like the history. So rock and roll really is part of the African-American root, but right. You know, at certain points, it moves on. Same with blues, same with jazz. And
just really quick, I don't want to digress, but have you seen that documentary on that band, a band called Death?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's dope.
Yeah. And you look at that, you're like, oh, we're in Detroit in 68, but
right.
We have nowhere to go because yeah. We're black and you're not playing Motown.
Right, right.
So it's tough. It's tough, you know, with just music should be universal and people want to play it and they feel a certain way, right. then let them. But yeah, I love to see people that are not pigeonholed necessarily one genre. And I think that's what I loved about Prince. You know, Prince, the Rainbow Children album was amazing, you know, as jazz. And I think people slept on a lot of those records because people want to put you in a box and what they remember. But as an artist, you have to continually to progress.
Right. Yeah. Music, you're right. Music is a universal language. I mean, the cool thing is that, you know, that record exists, you know, and it's accessible. You can access it. You can tap into that well, you know, for continued inspiration. But yeah, you know, I feel like, you know, genre is just another tool for creative expression. And I don't really like to be bound by the limitations of genre. I think of genre as like just another tool, like an instrument, like guitar or bass or whatever. It's just a tool used to be able to express whatever idea, feeling, or sentiment that you want to put across.
Yeah. Now, you have been playing music a long time. Obviously, you have origins. Did you start with one instrument first and then others? Or
it was guitar.
How did that work? Okay.
Yeah, no, it was guitar for sure. You know, I was a, you know, just a little kid when, you know, the live performance of Sign of the Times came out. And so like, that was like everything to me when I was growing up. And so I ran around with a little plastic guitar, playing it upside down, backwards and whatnot. And, you know, my folks were like, huh, I think you might have a future as a guitarist. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it all began. Guitar is definitely my first love.
And an amazing instrument. I mean, I think definitely a melodic instrument would make sense as a first guitar, piano.
Right.
And then Sign of the Times, yeah, an amazing, amazing record. And they've done live and the extended. I love the Chaka Khan remake of that song as well.
Yeah.
Done by Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, who obviously she was also produced in on Paisley Park at one point. So it's like a whole family affair. The Paisley Park, Mavis Staples, also amazing if people haven't heard it. Just in general. But now you've done an amazing amount of collaborations with Sheila E. And her whole family, Stevie Wonder, Ringo Starr, Beck, Common, Gary Clark Jr., Snoop Dogg, Miguel, Her, Earth, Wind & Fire, Gloria Estefan, George Duke, George Clinton, like just a laundry list of people, and it's all amazing. So how is it to kind of even kind of rub shoulders and collaborate with any of those amazing luminaries?
It's great. You know, that the most talented people I've noticed, like there's a trend, the most talented people are the most humble as well. And that's just... It's cool to be able to be in the same room as, you know, some of these incredible artists and kind of, you know, feel their energy. And I think it's been important to me to try to take something positive from each of those experiences and carry it on with me to the next thing. You know, I mean, we're all here to learn and grow and whatnot. And I'm just incredibly grateful. I feel nothing but gratitude for the experiences I've been able to have.
Is there one particular time or one particular artist you worked with that stands out in your mind?
Oh, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's a tie between Stevie and like Ringo Starr. I think, you know, the first time I met Stevie, I was like 17 or 18 years old, and it was at a restaurant. It wasn't even like in a working environment or anything like that. And I shook his hand. And I swear, like, I didn't wash my hand for like a week. I was like, are you supposed to? I think, you know, maybe I'll just wear a glove the rest of my life. And, you know, just so I can kind of have some of that, you know. And then Ringo, it was, we drove up to his complex. We were redoing a song of his on Sheila's record, actually. It was Come Together. Oh. And so we drove to his complex. The gate is, you know, graced with stars, and the road has a big star in the middle of it when you're driving down. And I open the door, and who do I see? Like right there is Ringo. And he just gives me a big hug. Like he's known me all my life. I've met him a couple of times before we worked together. But it was just really cool. Like, it's just such a genuine human being, you know. And then, you know, to be in the same room and know that of all the music that he helped create, you know, it's like, that's this, like the soundtrack of my life almost, you know, when you think about the Beatles catalog. So, yeah, I mean, those two are, you know, are definitely on the top of my list.
Yeah. And Beatles, I mean, both their catalogs are amazing for sure. But with Beatles, you're like, wow, they really did a lot in a very small amount of time. Same with Jimi Hendrix. You're like, well, he really only had like a handful of albums, but just, sometimes you just say a lot.
He made his stamp on the world. Yeah, he put his stamp on it. Yeah, for sure.
So then kind of explain to us your musical progression, because you've only been releasing records for the last couple of years since around 2019. Or did you have stuff before?
I had stuff out a while before. Like, I think I put some stuff out in like 2008 or 2009, you know, around then. But you know, your musical kind of tastes change, and then you go, I'm not into that anymore. And then you take it down or whatever. It's probably floating around on there somewhere. But yeah, my musical progression, it's constantly fluid, I think, you know, just what I'm into, the sound that I like and whatnot. You know, this particular record, I knew I wanted to go for that sort of Minneapolis sound vibe, you know, funk and rock and roll. It was kind of like the you know, my aim, you know, in terms of a vibe for the record. You know, and as far as like the next record, you know, I'm sure some of that's still going to bleed into the next thing, you know, but you know, I have, the problem I have now is I have so many songs that, you know, I'd like to add to, I like to put on a record, you know? But with this record, over half of the songs are new, you know, because we're in a constant state of creativity, you know, you get it as a musician, sure, and as an artist, sure. It's like, you know, I love this song, you know, but I'm not there right now. You know, that's not what I'm feeling right at this moment, you know? So, you know, I gotta just be true to who I am in this moment and write what fits, you know, the feeling I want to put across now, you know? So like there were a handful of songs that just so happened to fit with the concept of this record and the whole vibe and everything like that. But there were a lot that were like, okay, I guess I got to shelve you until I can find a home for you. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, you mentioned being from Minneapolis and the Minneapolis sound, and obviously Prince, Purple Rain, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, The Time. Artists that people don't think of, like Bob Dylan, I think has some roots there. Mm-hmm. Lizzo works with Prince and was there, mm-hmm, for a while. Like what is, I guess, the Minneapolis sound, and also just what's the vibe there?
I want to say something quippy. You know, so somebody asked Prince, you know, what is funk? And it's like, if you have to explain it, it ain't funky, sort of thing. I mean, the Minneapolis, sure, sound is kind of that, you know. It's like, you know it when you hear it, you know. I mean, it's you know, 2 and 4 is important. Like if I'm talking about it from a technical and practical sense, musical sense, yeah, you know, you got to have that backbone that's 2 and 4, and then, you know, going between major and minor sort of harmonies and whatnot, and then that funk guitar and whatnot, you know, that's kind of the vibe if I were to try to verbally explain it. But you know, it's one of those things that it's like, you know it when you hear it, more or less, you know. The vibe here, you know, the music is still alive and well in Minneapolis. You know, there's still a lot of great talent here. You know, sometimes it gets slept on, you know, because we're not LA, you know, we're not Nashville, you know, but we're Minneapolis. You know, we don't have to be LA. We don't have to be Nashville. It's its own thing. So, you know, don't sleep on us.
Nice. Well, I've never been, but it definitely sounds like there's a history and art, museum, cultures, and the clubs mm-hmm. that are still around, that have been there for quite a while. They're always still pushing the envelope and pushing out new talent.
Yeah. There's a, you know, kind of city famous, you could say world famous, but Bunker is a small club downtown. It's always something happening over there. You can go there every night and hear some great new music.
Yeah, I love the small hole in the walls, no frills, intimate. I love seeing artists that like now are big when they were small. Like, right. I feel like you never get that again. Like John Legend was at what, like House of Blues when he first did his first tour, or even smaller. And you're like, wow.
You know, I think that's one of the reasons Prince loved playing clubs, you know, was because like that, it just felt like home, you know? And it's a little more freeing. It's like, you know, I can, this is my creative space. I'm inviting you into my home, my living room, and we can just, you know, create music.
Definitely. Yeah. So just in general, from artist to artist, and for everybody listening, doing music is not easy, for sure. There's a lot of ups and downs, feast of famine. There's a lot of obstacles. Obviously, the pandemic was a huge obstacle. Where do we go? We can't tour. So like, how do you stay encouraged and motivated to keep going?
That was a tough one, especially during the pandemic. We went from playing the Grammys and, like, you know, it's arguably one of the world's biggest stages, to being completely cut off. Like, we had, our calendar was booked solid with touring with Sheila. Our calendar was booked solid, for the entire year. And then, you know, we all know what happened. I think there was a lot of denial at first, and I'm speaking specifically in regards to the pandemic, but, mm-hmm. You know, then there was the acceptance piece, you know, and what got me through it, what was just creating, was just sitting at the piano, was just, you know, playing my guitar. Songwriting is something that just the act of trying to take what's inside and put it out into, you know, some type of physical form is something that kind of keeps me encouraged and inspired. I mean, when you think about it, we as human beings, the musicians, have this ability to create something literally out of nothing. We're bending air. You know, I don't mean to get too deep on it, but like we're bending air. We're making mechanical vibrations in the air. And that's what music is. Like it's literally nothing but your creative soul, what's inside of you, you know? So, you know, trying to be open to receiving whatever it is that I need to receive at the time to be able to act as a conduit and a transducer to get that message out was enough to kind of keep me going in the pandemic. And it's enough to keep me going, you know, even outside of pandemic related stuff. You know, my family, my kids, you know, my wife, all of those kind of wholesome, you know, more wholesome personal things, you know, keep me going as well. You know, my faith keeps me going. You know, it's a combination of a lot of different things.
That's good though. That's a good mixture when you look at like the life of the pie, all those different buckets and segments kind of.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not just one thing, you know, I'm sure you can attest to that as well.
Yeah. I think we're learning that we're sharing this experience and journey through life. And there's a lot of synergies and similarities, you know,
right,
regardless of culture or ethnicity. I think at our core, we're basically all the same.
Right. You know, and during the pandemic, that was especially true. You know, we were kind of all experiencing this same sort of thing all together, even though we were isolated and whatnot. I think we all got to the point where it's like, hey, we're all going through this same experience together, you know, and there was something, you know, kind of comforting about that, you know, in a weird way. You know, it's like, we're, even though we're separate, we're still together, you know, sort of thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. My mom sums it up best. She says, we were all in the same storm, but not in the same boat.
Right. Right.
So I was like, wow, that's a good way to think about it. I ask everybody some rapid fire questions just for the next generation.
Sure.
What would you tell a newbie starting out in music today?
Record yourself every chance that you get. I think it's important to be able to hold a mirror at your playing and your development. And so I think the more that you can record yourself and listen back and is important. And take advantage of the technology age that we live in. You know, you have a wealth of musical professors that you can just have access to via YouTube, and you can slow it down and all those things. It's like, so take advantage of technology and record yourself.
Oh man, the youth know nothing of the grind of heavy vinyl.
Yeah.
Going to the library, like not being able to just click,
pull people up something. They don't understand it, or cassette, you know, it gets unraveled and you have to use the pencil, you know, it's like, or the pinky. It's like,
yeah.
Man, they don't know. Struggle is real.
Yeah. Or A-track. There was no rewind. You just had to listen to it.
That's it. Back. Yeah.
You had to keep driving around. Leaf gas was cheap.
Right.
But what do you want your legacy to be? Obviously you're super young and going to be a long time, but at the very, very end, what do you want people to say about Michael B?
Oh man, you know, I've been so busy living in the moment, I haven't really, you know, thought that far ahead. But you know, I think hopefully my music will be my legacy. Like I said, I have so much material, and it's you know, I just, the pandemic gave me a chance to really kind of reflect, and I realized that it was really important for me to be able just to get this out there, you know, just to get these musical ideas, these feelings, these thoughts out into the world. So this record is the first step of many, much more material that I'm going to be putting out. So I would say my music.
Okay. So when you think that, and obviously knowing a lot about Prince, how do you feel about posthumous record releases?
I think he even said, you know, it's like, you know, it's probably not going to be me that's putting it out, but you'll hear it eventually. You know, I think he said that in an interview. They were just ideas and thoughts and feelings. It was a moment that you were capturing, you know? So as long as it's done in an honorable and respectful way, you know, I think it's good. It can even be important, you know, because maybe it's something somebody else needs to hear. You don't even know it, you know? It's like, you know, sometimes for me anyway, I make music with very kind of selfish intentions. You know, I'm doing it for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this is something that I like, you know, whatever. But, you know, imagine never hearing September, Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know, it's like, you know, imagine, you know, never hearing Let It Be. You know, imagine, you know, Hotter Than July, the album never existing just because, you know, it's like, oh, I just made this for me. You know what I mean? You never know how it's going to affect somebody else, you know, and, you know, in a way it's like, and especially when you put it out there, then it's like, it really doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to everyone to kind of share, you know? So I think it can be cool if it's done in an honorable way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. As a fan, I love it for sure. As a musician, I think maybe they're like, hey, there's a reason why I didn't put this out. I don't want this out there.
Yeah. I get that too, you know, but you know, you gotta think, you know, it's like he, you know, I definitely can't speak for him or anything like that, but you know, he could have destroyed it all. You know what I mean? But he saved it, you know? Yeah.
And, all great artists have it. Stevie, yeah. I'm sure they're going to crack that vault. Earth, Wind, and Fire, everyone has something. Yeah. But Prince, man, they got a lot going on. I think Third Eye with Jack White is putting out a Camille album in its entirety. And then, they did a demo of I Feel For You. It's acoustic. And man, you can just hear the progression of where that went. Or the whole demos album that they did. That he did for other artists. It's nice to be able to understand like the origins of songs. Cause when you think of I Feel For You from the demo to the Prince version, to the Chaka Khan, I mean, there's like so many evolutions.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. I mean, it's cool from a musician's perspective, it's kind of cool to be able to, it's almost like you're a fly in the wall in the studio and the, you know, development of this material. And it's insightful, you know, and even, you know, I'm sure you've heard a few of the Michael Jackson multi-tracks. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to be able to kind of isolate each one. And you're like, oh, wow. It's like, and, you know, individually, they might sound like, you know, maybe it doesn't sound like anything particularly special separately. Mm-hmm. But then you start stacking those layers and you're like, oh, my gosh. Just like it's a surreal experience. You're like, oh wow, this is magical, almost like the way this is coming together. And you know, by the time you unsolo all of them, you're like, wow, like I have a whole new perspective on this track, you know, and a new appreciation for it too.
And work ethic. I mean, your demos sound better than people's best day.
right. But here's the other thing I want to just say really quick is that, you know, going back to, you know, some of those iconic and legendary artists, it's like, we're so focused on perfection in this day and age, you know, and I'm not like knocking any production techniques or anything like that. But I found, at least in my experience, the perfection is actually in the imperfections. That's where you get the magic. You know, if you're working on a track and it's like, oh, this isn't, you know, perfectly in time or perfectly in tune even, you know, it's like, you know, and then you go and, you know, slap your, you know, perfect everything on it. at least from personal experience, I've gone, oh man, now I've just sucked the life out of the song. Like, oh, thank God there's an undo in the 21st century. You know what I mean? And so it's like embracing the imperfection, you know, because sometimes that's where the real magic is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is some of the downsides of technology when you think of auto-tune and Melodyne. You do lose a piece of the soul and you lose a piece of the idiosyncrasies and the voice that we used to treasure. Some people were naturally flat, naturally sharp.
Right.
Some people just had like raw emotion, maybe not necessarily the best instrument.
Right.
And I think when you're striving for perfection, I think Leonard Cohen, he said it like, you know, we need the cracks. That's how the light gets in, or something to that effect. Like, it's
right.
True.
Yeah. Imagine slapping autotune on Bob Dylan.
Oh, call it a night. Unplug it. We got to go. There would be no good. That's also something about Bob Dylan. Like when you think of his songwriting and feel, he did not have the voice, but he had charisma and chops of writing and relaying a message. But then when you hear other people like Jimi Hendrix all on the Watchtower or Adele, Make You Feel My Love, you're like, oh, that's what that song's supposed to sound like? Man. You've owned it. And the same when you hear, Sinead O'Connor cover Prince, you're like, oh, that's what that vibe is? Or, I don't know, Nina Simone covering Screaming Jay Hawkins, you're like, wow, that's so different.
Elevated
to a different thing. But that's why I think there was times where people would do these covers a lot, because a song, if it's good at its core, can really go into different genres, into different voice types and moods.
A good song is a good song.
Yeah.
You know, a good song is just that, you know, a good song sounds good with just one instrument and a vocal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen to that, for sure. So how can people find you online? Where should they go to connect?
My website, michaelgabriel.com, my socials, Michael Gabriel. I think that's my handle for everything. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all of that.
Well, that's the beauty of your parents spelling it slightly different.
Yeah, with a Y. Yeah, so remember that. Michael with a Y.
Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure. Michael Gabriel, thank you for being on the podcast. 88.5 The SoCal Sound, At Home Interviews, Deeper Grooves Podcast. We hope to reconvene and keep connected about your career with the team. We'll circle back when all the links are out so we can get it out into the zeitgeist, into the universe. But yeah, keep making music, keep doing what you're doing. Love the sound. Love just your energy and who you are as a person, which I think is even more reflective in the music. You know, it's more about being than doing.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Cliff. I appreciate it.
I accept them all. I accept them all. Thank you so much, Michael. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Cliff. All right.
Take care. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Michael Gabriel episode 48. Season 5 of Deeper Grooves with your host, Cliff Beach. Super excited to talk about this legendary Minneapolis musician who's not only a musician, but a producer, arranger, engineer, mixer. And of course, that makes sense when your godfather is Prince and your godmother is Sheila E. He has worked with some illustrious musicians, including Usher, John Legend, Sheila E., Stevie Wonder, Ringo Starr, Hans Zimmer, Snoop Dogg, Beck, Common, St. Vincent, Miguel, Her, Earth, Wind & Fire, Gloria Estefan, George Duke, George Clinton, and more. And man, he has so much to tell us about the Minneapolis sound. If you've ever seen Purple Rain, you know what I'm talking about. People need to know the Midwest is on the map when it comes to funk, soul, R&B, rock, and beyond. And that's the great stories that you can always hear weekly on Deeper Grooves. So come back next week with more great interviews, and we look forward to having you.